Hello and welcome to a Sunday edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. Really interesting one today. Danny and I did over-unders for the East and West immediately when they came out at the beginning of October. And I wanted to go back and look at how we did and where we were right, where we were wrong. And then we'll also talk about maybe some news at the end, see if we got time for that. Danny, looking at this list, it's not looking so good for you, is it?
No, not on the bottom end, but I did well on the
although
ones,
you're gonna
the ones I felt
you're gonna make more money than me.
Yeah, and that, there are different ways of thinking about betting, and so I mean the ones that I was more marginal on, I did poorly on. I think because I'm more optimistic than you, but that works out because in a lot of cases the most kind of surprising disappointments, you were on that really well.
All right, let's get started. We're just gonna go through the teams here. The ones that are pretty obvious, we won't spend as much time on. The ones where we kind of went wrong, I think that's actually a lot more interesting to me to examine why that was. Let's start with Atlanta. Their preseason over-under was 49.5. They are currently 45-32, projected at 48-34. They would have to win all five of their remaining games to break their over-under. They have to get to 50. That's probably not going to happen. You and I both had under 49.5 for those.
Yeah, I actually, from what I remember when this came out, I thought the line was a little high. I expected to go over a low estimate, but they just, you know, they put it at 49.5, which was too rosy. So I thought it was a fairly easy call. They've had a nice season, but they haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, pretty much all the things that we thought would happen have, frankly, for this team. The only thing we missed was that they would be so much better on defense than they were last year, but Kyle Korver hasn't been as good. He's older. He was coming off the injury. They've missed Carroll. I mean, in some ways, they really... Al Horford declined a little bit. Millsap actually stayed about the same, which is pretty remarkable. In some ways, they've actually kind of done a little bit better. Kent Bazemore, we didn't think he would be as good as he has been. But yeah, I mean, this one, I think we can put a feather in both of our caps. Almost exactly what we thought would happen has happened to this team. I wasn't all over this under, but I felt pretty decent about it, given all the factors indicating they would regress from last year, including the fact that their point differential last year was not indicative of a 60-win team.
And another team in a very similar boat is the Boston Celtics. The over-under was set at 42.5. They are already over that at 44-32. They'll win more games than that. And we both thought that number was too low, and they've blown by it a little bit.
Yeah, they were 40-42 last year, but they had killed it once Isaiah Thomas came over. I think they were 24-12. After that, our big concern about them was that maybe they would play David Lee too much. That, in fact, happened earlier in the year, and they were kind of hovering around 500. And right about the time they excised him from the rotation, they really took off, and now they're going to comfortably get past it, even with a little bit of the Jay Crowder injury. One of the big reasons I liked them was that when guys got injured, they had enough depth to where it wasn't going to kill them. Those are the type of teams I liked kind of doing the over on. And looking pretty good for them.
That dovetails with the Brooklyn Nets, who dealt with a lot of injuries and did not have the depth to support it. So their over-under was 28.5. We both went over, and they're not going to get close to it.
Yeah, they are not, especially with today's news that Brook Lopez and Thaddeus Young are going to be shut down for the season. Those are obviously by far their two best players. I actually think that that's great news for them. I mean, it's great news for the Celtics, obviously, who have their pick. But I think that this is evocative of the new strategy, which is just, you know, at least under Marks to start with, which is we don't care about what the optics are. These guys could just get hurt. This is a lost season. If we give over a bigger pick to the Celtics, who cares? It doesn't matter. It's already a sunk cost.
Yep, I advocated for that when they fired Billy King in the in a piece for Sporting News.
Yeah, and going back to, I mean, 28.5, they're going to fall well short of that, as we said. Projected 22-60, that's probably about right. Although without Lopez and Young, they may not win another game. They could finish 21-61. But I think that we probably were just anchored a little bit too much on the fact that they made the playoffs last year with largely the same roster. Now, if they still had Joe Johnson, if Rondé hadn't gotten hurt, maybe they could have just squeaked over it. But we noted that they could be one of the worst teams in the league if things went wrong, and I definitely wish I had that one back. I was too optimistic on them, and maybe I listened to Bontemps too much. That was my problem, I think.
Yeah, the word disaster potential, which was, I think, coined on that podcast, was applied to them as well, though it didn't apply as much as the team that it was originally talking about.
All right, before we keep talking about all these over-unders that Danny got wrong, let's take a quick time to tell you about Indochino Custom Menswear, a new sponsor for us. a sponsor that is near and dear to my heart, since I am somewhat of an oddly proportioned human. I've never been able to get off-the-rack suits to fit me very well, and I never could afford to get a premium suit that was made to measure until now. Right now, my listeners can get any premium suit for just $3.99 up to 50% off at Indochino.com when entering the Capspace code at checkout. You take 14 measurements of yourself that go into making a suit that fits you perfectly. You can send those over, or if you are in a city with an Indochino store, you can go in and have them do the measurements for you. 3 to 4 weeks later, your awesome suit will come in. And if it doesn't fit you perfectly, you can send it back. They will adjust it for you. And if it still doesn't fit you perfectly, you can return it for free. So no risk whatsoever. You can get an awesome made-to-measure suit that finally is going to fit you perfectly. It's the only way to buy a suit. Things have changed. You don't have to bother with all these awful off-the-rack suits anymore. And you can go to Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE, any premium suit for just $3.99 with free shipping. Indochino, your look, your way. All right, Charlotte was 32.5, which was absolutely insanely low, considering they had won more than that last year. They basically had 2 months of the year last year where they didn't do anything at all. One, because they kind of tanked at the end of the year once they were out of it and everyone got hurt. And in the beginning of the year, they punted a month on Lance Stephenson as the starter, and he had one of the worst seasons in NBA history. And we were sweating it a little bit because MKG had not gone down when we did this. So I was worried their defense would decline, but Steve Clifford is a defensive wizard still. They are the one team that actually has changed the way they played in terms of taking more threes, and that actually worked. So yeah, they are 44-31, projected 48-34 finish. They are comfortably over.
Yeah, I think they got close to passing their over-under by the All-Star break. I think they got it a little bit later in the month, but that's awfully impressive.
Yeah, and this is one of the ones where we thought they would be pretty good. I didn't see their offense improving as much. But even after MKG went down, I still felt like they would probably win like 34 games and be over. But yeah, this has been a fantastic season for them. All right, the first one that we differed on, Chicago, 49.5. I went under, you went over. They are 38-38, projected to finish at 40-42.
Yeah.
Where'd you go wrong on these guys?
I think it was kind of like the Nets, where I talked myself into their potential, you know, like what they could be, and like, oh, you know, it's possible things go bad, but I think they have the talent to pull it out, and you know, they kind of do. But Noah being out as much as he was, you know, they dealt with kind of a lot of different things. I thought that maybe their offense would sing a little bit more, especially than it did early in the season. So I was, you know, this was one of the closer calls for me. Like, it wasn't one where I was like, oh, yeah, and hammer the over from what I remember. And I was wrong.
Yeah, I wasn't, like, hammer the under either. And I thought that this team had the potential to win 55 games. I thought that they would be one of the top two threats in the East to Cleveland. And for a time, they played okay, although they were really outperforming their point differential. The defense was really good until Noah went out. But my number one reason for ultimately going under was just the health. Rose had already fractured his eye. I thought that that might be a problem with him missing all of training camp. It turned out that it was. He was awful for 2 months and really never picked up Hoiberg's system of pushing the ball. I thought they would miss Dunleavy. That was the case. And just generally the health record of the organization, you knew that other guys were going to get injured. And Noah got hurt. Jimmy Butler missed a bunch of time after his knee injury was arguably mismanaged. And, you know, they probably would have gotten pretty close to this. They were on pace for almost 50 wins before Butler went down. But after that, it's been a disaster.
Yeah. Let's move on to Cleveland. This was one of those kind of a number-based thing that we both went the same way, because their over-under was set at 56.5. They are currently 54-22, so it could go both ways depending on how they rest their guys. We both said under, and that's still a possibility.
Kyrie is actually going to miss today's game against Charlotte. Toronto has started resting guys too, so I don't think that there's going to be a huge impetus. They're projected to finish at 58-24, but they definitely are, had no problem resting guys. You'll remember the Celtics basically got into the playoffs and got their seed because Cleveland rested their guys in both of the games against the Celtics last year. So it's possible this could still go under, probably going to go over. I mean, my thinking on the under was just, I thought when healthy, they were a 60-62 win team. And I thought just with Mozgov, Love coming off injury. Shumpert was out for like 2 months.
Kyrie missed the start of the season.
Kyrie didn't really even come back until mid-December, and actually has not really been the same over the course of the entire season either. I mean, really, the defense has been kind of better, and I think they've also outperformed their point differential just a little bit so far to be on this pace. But no, I mean, we've been talking about it all the whole time that I thought they would struggle a little bit more, especially early in the year, and they did not. So we could still win this one, but it's not looking too great.
Yeah, the way that we would do it is that other than maybe the Bucks, and they're still playing hard, every team that they face has something to play for right now. So, you know, if they're going to rest guys and do a little bit of that kind of a dance, then they could end up – we could end up winning this, actually, I think.
Well, let's hope for it. Detroit was 33.5. You and I both had the over, although somewhat tentatively. And maybe that was just a little bit because I got burned on their over the previous year, which was like 36.5 or something, and all the Josh Smith and all that stuff. But Detroit started the year 5-1. They are always looking like a very good bet to beat this, and they already have won 41 games, projected to finish with 43.
Yeah, it continues the storyline for me with Charlotte of a team with a good coach that had kind of questionable talent just in terms of how it was going to fit together, just blowing by their number.
Yeah, and Drummond, especially earlier in the year, was unbelievable. Reggie Jackson has probably been better than I think a lot of people would have thought. They've gotten decent growth from the young guys, and then also the midseason trade that they made, I think, has helped.
And Marcus Morris, early in the year, did a lot better than we thought.
Yeah, that was another guy we kind of wondered about that. Their bench was a little bit of a problem with Blake and Baines getting a lot of flack early on, but not enough to really sink them. So, yeah, I'm glad we went this way. I'm glad we cast a vote in favor of Stan Van Gundy and just the fact that Josh Smith was gone. My big worry about them was that they were going to miss Greg Monroe and that the downgrade from him to Baines at backup center would be big. But then they also benefited from not ever having to play Monroe and Drummond together. And, you know, they're just a lot better this year.
Yeah, they are. Next up, Indiana. The over-under was set at 42.5, which from what I recall was just a really good number. I think neither one of us was particularly comfortable with it. And they right now it looks like they're going to go over it. They're at 40-36, and their projected is 43-39, but because they do have a very soft remaining schedule, depending on how the Knicks and – I mean, how the Cavs and Raptors rest their guys.
Yeah, that could be a big part of it. Although I would say Indiana probably scares me the most – out of those teams that are kind of left. And so maybe the Raptors and Cavs will have the incentive to want to avoid Indiana by beating them. Although they are still looking like a pretty big lock for the playoffs. I think they're over like 90% now with that Bulls loss to the Pistons yesterday and Indiana coming back on Philly as Philly continues to be the anti-Warriors in the last 5 minutes of close games. But yeah, so 42.5, I went barely under. My reasoning was that I just wasn't sure Paul George would be back as capital letters Paul George. And he actually has been pretty darn close to that. And I mean, I think the biggest thing that's been a disappointment, you know, if you had told me before the year that Paul George was going to play as well as he did, I would have had this team for winning like, you know, 46 games or something. But I think the biggest disappointment has been they were going to go small. They were going to juice the offense. And that really has never ended up happening. I think Monte Ellis has been kind of a negative for them as well. And, you know, they're basically the same old Pacers, you know, 20s in offense, top five in defense. And they have a pretty good point differential, too. I think they're a little bit better than 43 wins as a point differential. So I can't take any credit if it does end up going under. I think I missed on these guys a little bit.
Jan Mahinmi's had a nice season, too. I feel like we need to mention him as a part of this over-under. I think he's...
That's right, yeah. I talked about that, hey, they might miss Hibbert defensively, and the way Hibbert has played in L.A. and the way they've played, that was not the case at all. So that was another reason I thought about going under. That was totally wrong.
Miami was set at 45.5. I think we both felt pretty good about the over. This was a team that had a lot of potential, and they're battling with it a little bit, but they should go over.
Yeah, they're 44-32 now after getting blown out in Portland last night. Projected for 47-35. All they have to do is win two more. I think that they will. I mean, they kind of have this late Western road trip that's messing with them a little bit, but it would be hard to imagine them not winning two more games, especially since they're going to be trying. And I mean, I think if Chris Bosh had been healthy the entire second half of the year, they would have really blown past this. I mean, we were talking about them as potentially the biggest threat to Cleveland in the East. They may still, in fact, be that. What has been different about them than you thought? You know, I don't know that they've quite gotten there the way we expected them to.
Early in the season, Tyler Johnson really outplayed what I expected. They've gotten those kind of contributions. Josh Richardson more recently has done a nice job. Whiteside, I think, has been a little bit better than I expected. And the Deng Winslow experience, I think, worked a little bit better than I expected, though that's been largely, I think it's done about what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, if you had told me that Bosch was going to miss all this time, I would have thought they probably don't hit this.
Right.
And getting Joe Johnson, I think getting a little more shooting has helped. Goran Dragic has disappointed a little bit. I guess, you know, they've probably gotten more out of Wade than we would have thought that they did. He deserves some credit there. And I think their defense has been maybe a little better than you might have expected. The offense may be a little bit worse. I was worried about their lack of spacing, especially earlier in the year before they got Johnson. That was a legitimate concern as well. But, you know, I wasn't like, you know, this wasn't one of my best bets, but I felt relatively confident with the over. It looks like it's going to come through.
Milwaukee Bucks was set at 43.5, and they're going to go way under. And what I'm, for myself, because I'm the one who got this wrong, we disagreed on it, you got it right with the under, I got it wrong with the over, is that I said they weren't going to make the playoffs, and I don't understand how I said they weren't going to make the playoffs and they were going to hit the over here. I think I just messed up.
Well, my thought on Milwaukee was that they're just going to really struggle offensively. They actually have been like pretty close to average in offense despite the lack of spacing. Giannis and Chris Middleton struggled very early in the year, but they've probably both been maybe a little bit better than expected. Jabari came back pretty early on. He's been better offensively than you probably would have thought coming off the ACL tear. Monroe has been about what you would have expected offensively. All the guard injuries have really hurt them. But the big thing that held them back was the defense, and I expressed a little bit of concern about that because I was like, all right, you know, Jabari and Monroe in the front court, like, how is their defense going to be as good as it was last year? They lost Pachulia, who was pretty good. And I also thought that their bench, which was awesome last year, guys like Bayless and Mayo, was playing way over their heads last year, and they were going to regress. That, in fact, has happened. I think I didn't see their defense falling quite as far as it has, but I feel pretty good about the prediction on this one. What really changed? Was anything other than the factors I mentioned that you felt like, you know, surprised you that you got wrong?
No, not really. I think I missed just how much of an impact losing Dudley and Pachulia.
I
liked both those guys, but I'm like, oh, you know, they have other guys that can sop up those minutes. And, you know, Jabari stayed relatively healthy this year. I mean, not like, oh, you're not playing 80 games, but, you know, he stayed relatively healthy. So that part of it, but just having that depth, basically having good players out there for 48 minutes, that might have made them get substantially closer to this number.
Yeah, Vasquez getting hurt didn't help. Mayo has been hurt basically all year with the hamstring, and now that broken leg suffered in somewhat weird circumstances. Michael Carter Williams was actually starting to play a little bit better than had the hip injury. Although, I mean, even when all those guys were healthy, they were well on pace to be under anyway. All right, let's get to the Knicks. 31.5 over under. They are currently 31-46, projected to finish at 33-49. You and I both had this under actually as one of our best bets, although neither of us put a ton of money on it. I guess it's pretty fair to say that we got this one wrong. Where did we go wrong?
I think just the replacing, for the most part, replacing horrendous players with NBA players helped them a lot. You know, that really pushed them up. I think they got more out of Melo this year than I expected. And Porzingis has been a lot better.
Yeah, Porzingis is the biggest one to me. I mean, I thought he was going to be playing 20 minutes a game, maybe would show some flashes by the end of the year. He started at power forward and probably played unsustainably well over the first 20 games or so, especially with stuff on the offensive rebounds. Their point differential actually is a little bit better slightly, I think, than where they're projected to finish. I think the biggest thing to me was just Porzingis. And then also actually Langston Galloway playing well. Lance Thomas, they got a lot out of him as well. They've missed him during this recent swoon. There is a chance that they might not win another game the rest of the way because Porzingis is injured.
But they play the Sixers.
Is done. Yeah, on the road.
True.
On the road, though.
Go Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, they probably will. And I think that they're playing the Pacers a couple of times. You know, they're probably, I mean, I understand why they're favored to win. But, you know, there's still some hope that we can cling to on this one. It's looking, you know, probably a 5% chance all the rest of their games.
Yeah, I think there's a better chance of that, though, than us hitting the Orlando bet, which is that Orlando was at 32.5. They, like the Knicks, are at the below the decimal point. So if they win one more time, they get it. I feel pretty confident they're going to win again and knock us out of this one.
Yeah, they're projected for 35-47 to go 3-3 the rest of the way. You know, they were 32.5. I mean, we did these on October 1st. A lot of these lines move quite a bit. You know, I'm sure that we didn't have anything to do with that, but I think Orlando actually finished at like 34.
Right.
Or something like that. And Sacramento moved a lot too. I mean, they were 30.5, and I think they moved to like as high as like 35 or something at one point. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, it moved a lot. And it's funny because I did the other over under podcast with Arturo Galletti, and those two lines, I think for the Orlando one, I liked the under and it flew up, and then for the Kings, I liked the over and it flew up, and then I liked the under, which actually looks like it might be right in both ways.
Yeah, that would be a nice little bit of arbitrage for you if you'd actually bet that. And Boston was another one. I think that went way up from 42.5 once it first came out. But anyway, yeah, back to Orlando. You know, weren't they like 20-13 at one point? Like they were like awesome, and then everything went downhill. Skiles, you know, losing Fry, I think, really hurt them as well at the trade deadline, although they had already really kind of begun the swoon. I mean, basically all of this difference comes down to that big start that they had. And I think a lot of that was guys, random veterans just playing way over their head. Guys like Jason Smith was randomly like awesome, you know.
Well, and if you remember, a lot of their early losses were games that they could and should have won. Like it was a crazy stretch where they didn't, they were outperforming, and like they blew that game to the Thunder. They blew a couple other games. I think against the Wizards, they had a game where they were up like 5 with 30 seconds to go. And so you're looking at like, wow, this team might be, you know, maybe they're the Pistons, like a team where we just thought they'd be way better than those expectations, and then they came back to her.
Yeah, the only guy, if you look at their team as a whole, the only guy who really outperformed was Evan Fournier, and I think he actually really helped them. You know, he's a guy who probably, you know, could get paid $15 million or maybe even a little more than that in restricted free agency. We'll see, but especially with the earlier moratorium end, that'll probably help him. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're, and I guess, you know, some of the vets like Jason Smith would be the other guy who really outperformed. I mean, I felt like the process on this one, picking the under, was about right. They're going to get past it a little bit, but I definitely think the way they have performed over the second half of the season is much more who they are as a basketball team than like that halcyon first half that they had.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The Sixers, it was set at 21.5. We disagreed on this one. You were right with the under. My logic was it's just really hard to predict that a team's not going to win 20 games. And look at that. They're not going to win. They might win half that.
I mean, are they going to, they're like one of the worst ones on the board. I mean, they're projected to finish 10-72. Right now, they may not even win another game. They would tie their own record for the worst, least number of wins in an 82 game season. Charlotte in 2011-12, the lockout year, had a slightly worse percentage than Philly could finish with, so it wouldn't, maybe it wouldn't technically be as bad of a season, although I think I might give more credit, or whatever the opposite of credit is, to finishing 9-73 over a full season versus, you know, a 66 game season. But what went wrong for these guys?
Well, their talent, for me, it was just the logic of, you know, they'll win a couple of games just out of grit and all that, and they blew a lot of close games. We've talked about how horrendous they were in games that included a stretch before they won their first where they just blew. I think they blew a game against Miami. There were a couple other ones. And it's crazy when you think about, there was that little swoon they had when they, or that little, you know, rise when they got Ish Smith, and yet they're still going to win 9 or 10 games this year.
Yeah, imagine where they'd be if they hadn't traded for him. You know, maybe you could say that 2 first-round draft picks is
2 seconds
worthy of not, or sorry, yeah, thank you, 2 second-round picks is worthy of not setting, you know, winning 6 games or something that it could, that's really how bad it could have been maybe if they didn't have Ish. But despite that, you know, they have more talent on the team this year than they did last year, I think. But last year, it fit together better, right? Like, they were 12th in defense last year, although they had just an unbelievably terrible offense. I think also the injuries really hurt them. Okafor, not really that helpful of a player, but at least gave them somewhere to go. You know, I think they might have won a couple more games down the end of the year. And Robert Covington missing a lot of times. Like, whenever he's not played, God, they've been bad. Like, and he missed, like, the first 8 or 9 games when they were just getting completely destroyed. When he was missing time with a concussion later, they're also getting completely destroyed. Noel not playing at center, and he hasn't been playing that much recently either. He's missed some time, but, yeah. It was some of the issues with Okafor and, like, the personal stuff. Really, everything went absolutely wrong for them. I was thinking they were going to win, like, 18 or 19 games. Like, I didn't think they would be worse than last year.
Yeah.
And they were. I mean, so that under, I kind of got a little lucky on.
Toronto was at 45.5. They've already passed it with 51 wins. They'll be the number 2 seed in the East. And I got this wrong. You got it right. I laid entirely at the feet of DeMar DeRozan.
Well, Kyle Lowry, too.
Yeah, Lowry actually staying on the court more, you know, playing a higher proportion of the year and not fading like he did last year really helped, too.
Yeah, skinny Lowry was unbelievable. I think their defense was so much better. That was one of the reasons I thought that I ultimately went over. I didn't feel unbelievable about it. But I thought that getting rid of Vasquez and Lou Williams, and they took basically one of the worst defensive second units, and with Corey Joseph, Biombo, they made it one of the best. Part of the reason I thought they'd be better is Damari Carroll. He's barely played all year, and they've still been really good. But yeah, the defense getting a lot better, and then Lowry staying healthy for the year, DeRozan improving. You know, everything really has gone right for them, frankly, this year. And I'm glad I decided to do the over. And I mean, I guess, you know, they had won 48 the last 2 years. I didn't see a ton of reason to believe that they would be worse this year. So that was kind of my thinking.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who they lost from last year's team.
I mean, they lost Amir Johnson.
Oh, that's,
you know,
right.
Maybe we thought that would be an issue. Yeah, they lost Amir and they lost Lou Williams and Vasquez. Those are the big losses. I mean, do you remember anything else about why you went under?
I just thought it was on the rosier side, and so it was basically if Lowry missed like 20 games, I think I was thinking, you know, if he misses any serious time, yeah, then they would have gone way under, and you know that still would have been possible, but it didn't really happen. Even though he's getting his elbow drained now.
Well, Washington, my biggest miss. I foolishly, although I acknowledge there was only a 20% chance of this, they were my pick. I will own it. Said that they would be the number one seed in the East because I felt like somebody else besides Cleveland had to do it, and they seemed like one of the more logical candidates. 45.5, they are not going to get there. It would be impossible. 37-39, projected 40-42, and out of the playoffs. Where did we blow it on these guys?
How were they less healthy than we thought they would be? Because I think we assumed they were going to be unhealthy.
You know, actually, I think we actually thought that Beal would be more healthy, which was kind of foolish. He didn't turn out to be. I think that this might have been one where we bought into the whole, hey, they're playing way faster. Although, you know, this is before the preseason, though, so it was more just comments than it was actually seeing them in preseason.
Well, and their personnel fit it better. So it's like, oh, well, they're going to have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, what really I thought was the problem is, Wall also, I thought he was going to really take the next step. In fact, I think he might have actually regressed a little bit, especially defensively. I mean, that was the big problem. The defense just was not where it was in previous years. Allen Anderson, we thought they would get something from him. He basically has missed nearly the entire year. He's out now with a grade 2 groin strain. Probably won't play again this year, you would have to imagine, unless they make the playoffs, which they're very unlikely to do. And Otto Porter, I think a lot of people thought he would take a step forward. I was not as rosy, but I thought he would be a little bit better than he was. I thought they would actually have the personnel to play small the way they were talking about, and instead they didn't. I mean, the power forward situation was a total disaster. They did make the trade for Markieff, and they've been playing a little better since they got him, but not that much better. So yeah, I don't know. What else did I miss on where we screwed up on them?
I think that sums it up pretty well.
Nene missed a bunch of time.
Yeah,
I mean, that's obviously something we would have expected. But yeah, I mean, like Humphreys, they got, like, last year they got actual real contributions from someone like Drew Gooden. Like, Drew Gooden actually played for them in the playoffs last year, you know, and he basically was, you know, had some calf injuries and basically never played after that. So yeah, I mean, the decline in the defense, I thought that they've always defended well under Whitman. They would be able to continue to do that, and they just never did, and now they're probably going to miss the playoffs.
Yep. Now we move to the West, and the Dallas Mavericks was at 38.5. We both like the under, and they're going to go over.
Yeah, you would have to imagine that they would. There's some possibility that they won't. They're 38-38 now.
Did they lose out?
All right, so D. Will is out. Parsons is out. I mean, they're starting like J.J. Barea, who's been unbelievable at point guard. I mean, some possibility is not. I'm talking about, like, you know.
You're being a lawyer right now.
Well, that's what I meant. Yeah. Some though implies more than 3%. So yeah. I probably shouldn't have said that. But and I'm just trying to be optimistic for our pick here. I mean, I think really the biggest place that we went wrong, Wes Matthews has been about what we expected. He has not shot the ball well this year. He and Parsons have actually probably played more than we would have expected. Parsons, when he got healthy, was awesome. Also, I think the biggest miss, though, even more than being worried about those injuries, was I thought Dirk would take a step back, and instead he has been fantastic all year. So that's where I blew that one. We've talked about that plenty of times. But still, I think so much stuff has gone right for them this year, and they're still not going to get much past there.
Yeah, I think that Dirk is a big one. The other one is Zaza Pachulia, I think, is what over the course of the season was a big part of them knocking this over, because he's just been a nice stability piece for their defense. And, Carlisle has done a good job getting a lot out of centers, and I think he's done a really nice job for them.
Denver, one of our, I guess not biggest, because it's only, I think we're going to end up being off by 6.5 games, but they're 26.5. You and I both went with relatively tentative unders on this one. They're projected to finish 33-49. They've already blown past it.
We knew that they were going to be relying on a teenage point guard, Emmanuel Mudiay, and that they would have some growing pains with that. I believe Wilson Chandler was already out when that happened.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't. Okay.
Yeah, so that's actually even a bigger miss. If he'd been healthy, they probably would have won 36, 37 games.
Yeah, and
like
so, I think we both projected Gallo would miss time, which he has, and Nurkic was hurt, though.
Nurkic, the thing of this is why I think it was one of our biggest misses on the board, is because things probably went about as badly for them this year as you possibly could have expected.
Except Jokic.
From a health standpoint, and they still have been great. Will Barton has been awesome. We didn't see that. I mean, I don't think we even mentioned him when we were talking about them in the podcast to start the year. Jokic has been fantastic, obviously. And Nurkic, we thought he would be back. He basically has just started playing again recently, and he's been pretty terrible coming off that torn patellar tendon. Gallo has missed a bunch of time as well. Mudiay missed a month and a half with that ankle sprain. I think getting DJ Augustin has actually really helped them in that trade, solidifying their backup point guard a little bit.
Jameer's missed time too. Yeah,
he's missed a ton of time. And these guys, their young guys just have all really overperformed. I mean, you noted the other day that Mudiay came back, they're scoring 106.5 points per 100 with him on the court, which is great. It's just been a really good year for them, which is surprising to say for a team that's going to win 33 games. But their young guys have all looked fantastic.
Their future is bright. I think people aren't talking about it enough.
Darrell Arthur also has finally shot the ball well this year after he hadn't in a long time. Golden State's. We both had over 60.5.
It felt a little bit ridiculous at the time just because 60 wins is so many, but I think we both felt confident in the over, and we should have been.
Yeah. They are well past that already. I mean, it's crazy to think that their over-under was 60.5 and that they are going to be one of the teams that exceeds that their over-under by the most. So that's pretty remarkable. Also remarkable that they were a mere 9-2 in championship odds. And I think that's just because everyone thought, all right, you have these five powerhouses in the West. Everyone thought the Clippers and Houston were going to be awesome, and that OKC and the Spurs were also going to be awesome, and that Golden State might regress a little health-wise, which in fact they have, but it hasn't stopped them at all. I think the biggest thing that we didn't see coming with them was just that Steph Curry and Draymond Green would take this much of a leap forward offensively.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible that they've gotten the improvement they have from those guys who were already, elite talents in the league.
Yeah, Steph is having the best offensive season ever. We probably did not see that. I don't know that we thought they would necessarily be the number one offense this year. I mean, they had taken a step forward last year from 12th to 2nd, and you thought they would regress a little bit. And then Draymond basically doubling his assists, averaging 7 assists a game. Now embracing playing small more, the defense being almost as good, and to the extent it's not, it's just due to injuries and boredom. Yeah, everything has gone right for this team. We talked about them enough. But you actually were smart enough to put $30 of our fake money on those 9-2 odds. So if that comes through, you're obviously going to win everything. If it doesn't, you probably will end up losing. To one of our bigger misses, Houston, 54.5. You were very strong on the over. You thought they were going to win like 58. I didn't like it as much. I was thinking more 55, 56. I went more of a tentative over, but regardless, we were both wrong. They're 37 and 39 projected, 41 and 41
finish. I mean, so their talent level, especially, you know, I didn't necessarily love Lawson, though I thought he was a nice addition, you know, just to have another guy who can play basketball for them. And you, when you get the positive reinforcement, like I talk about feedback loops within a game of, you know, like, oh, you have a good defensive stop that helps you on offense. I thought that when you have such a successful season like they did, that you will take the positives from that and work it forward. And that did not happen.
Well, a lot of the reason why we were optimistic about them, despite the fact that their point differential wasn't quite as good as the record would have indicated when they won 56 last year, was that we thought Dwight Howard would be healthier. He has been, but he's been bad, especially defensively. But we also felt like they would get something out of their young guys. We felt that Jones and Demo could both take a step forward. Demo, it's been a lost year. Jones is like getting DMP CDs. He's been terrible all year. We thought that Lawson would help. He hasn't, but still the offense has actually taken a step forward from last year. It's just that the defense has been so incredibly bad. We thought they might get something out of KJ McDaniels this year. They really haven't, although, you know, they've been saying he's improving a little bit, but, you know, that hasn't shown on the court, and it's kind of too late now to affect their season-long fortunes. But yeah, I mean, just the defense going from like sixth in the league to, you know, bottom five, I forget exactly where it is right now, something that absolutely nobody saw coming.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I think we should move on. Clippers was set at 56.5. I thought that was just too high a number. I like the Clippers this year, but I thought that was too high a number, and that was right for both of us.
Yeah, it was. For them to get to 57, that's the most they've ever gotten in the Chris Paul era. I think the reason why was wrong. I felt like this could be the year Paul took a step back. Instead, he is arguably even having a better regular season than he did last year. I thought Blake would be healthier. He hasn't been. You know, they're going to finish with, projected to finish with 52 wins. Maybe if Blake had been healthy all year, they might have gotten somewhat close to that, but they've gotten nothing out of Paul Pierce. We thought that he would actually be an addition that could really be helpful for them. They really got nothing out of Lance Stephenson, ended up trading him away. They got nothing out of Josh Smith. I mean, I don't forget that he was even on the Clippers at this point. So the much ballyhooed renovation of the bench didn't work at all. And, you know, that reason and Griffin's injury is probably why they ultimately aren't going to get there. But we got this one right.
But who knows? Maybe if we had known they were going to acquire Jeff Green, we would have gone with the over because he's such a difference maker.
The other Los Angeles team, the Lakers, were 29.5. You did not bet this. I put like $5 on it, but I felt great about it. And basically exactly what we thought was going to happen to them this year has, if anything, it's been worse, but worse in all the ways that we thought it was going to be bad to begin with. So I think we can both feel pretty good about this one.
Yeah, we knew they wouldn't defend. They haven't defended. I think D'Angelo Russell on the court has done better than I expected, considering his age and the surrounding talent. So that's a nice little sign moving forward, though, of course, now there are other little warning signs on the horizon. But, you know, I think they've had the season we expected.
Yeah, the one thing I said that I would like to pat myself on the back for was how bad they were going to be on offense, because you looked at this team, and other than Lou Williams, there was nobody who had a history of being an efficient offensive player. And even I couldn't have predicted that Kobe would have the usage that he did and shoot like 35% from the field for the whole year. And especially the way he was gunning in those first like 2 months or so were completely insane. That really killed them, obviously. But even when he's out, you know, they've been a little better without him, but not really much. I thought maybe Roy Hibbert could help the defense a little bit. That didn't prove to be the case at all.
Yeah. Memphis, over-under was set at 50.5. I went over, you went under. My logic was that they're one of those teams that even though it didn't look like it would all work on paper, they just always do it, and this was the year they didn't.
Yeah, the injuries have made it pretty obvious that they're not going to get there. I wasn't factoring those in, that Conley and Gasol would basically miss half the year, both of them. But even when they were playing better, their point differential was like in the negative, but there's some chance they actually could have gotten there if everyone had stayed healthy. But my thinking was everybody on this team was basically going to likely to play worse, except for maybe Conley, and then he's been injured. Gasol was nowhere near the player that he was last year, ended up then breaking his foot. Zach Randolph is taking a little bit of a step back, although he's playing better recently as their, you know, really only NBA front court player. Brandon Wright, who we thought might help them, has missed basically the entire year. We thought that maybe Jordan Adams could help them. He's missed basically the entire year, and now they're, you know, they're just got it's Zach Randolph and the replacement levels going forward here. So, yeah, they ended up being way under. I mean, I understand why you picked them, because they have a history of sort of outperforming their fundamentals, and they still, in fact, have done that this year. It's just that the fundamentals have fallen so far that they can't overperform to the tune of 50.5 wins.
Yeah, Minnesota, 25.5. It's going to be, you know, pretty much right on the margin. You said under, I said over, and looks like I'm probably going to be right.
I think your statement was something along the lines of, this is an emotional over for me. I think you just wanted that to happen. But yeah, it looks like you're going to be right. And I think they started the year off incredibly well. They really had to slide to get to this point. And people forget that everyone was talking about, oh, wow, they did such a good job of bringing in these vets, and KG and Tayshaun Prince are really helping their mentality and all this. And they probably, if they hadn't been playing Zach LaVine at backup point guard and actually had been starting him all year and not messing around with like Kevin Martin, they probably would have really blown past this, probably gotten to like 30 wins. They're projected to finish 27-55. I could still maybe win this one, but it seems unlikely that they won't win another game. What is sort of surprised? What did you have right about these guys?
I thought Ricky Rubio's regular presence was going to make a huge difference, and as he's just...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I thought the biggest reason I had for the under was he gets hurt every year, and he had that terrible ankle injury last year, and even in camp they were talking about him not going full bore. I thought he was going to miss a bunch of time, and he actually has not, but whenever he hasn't been on the court, they've been awful. So if he had missed time, I probably would have won this one, but he actually has stayed healthy, and so you were right, and I was wrong on that one.
Towns has played great. Jang has had a much better year than I anticipated, and I think he's a big part of how they could hit this over.
Nobody could have thought that Towns would be this good. He's been unbelievable.
And LaVine has done well when they've actually played him in the right position. They've had some guys that have shown some depth on, you know, some ability outside of their main guys. But I think Towns and Rubio are the reasons that they're going to hit this.
Yeah, they've also gotten nothing out of the power forward position all year until now. They finally have started. I shouldn't say that, because KG actually by RPM was still somehow a pretty effective
player.
They
defended so well when they played Towns and Garnett together.
Yeah, and Rubio, I mean, that's three pretty good defensive players. But, yeah, I mean, Bielitsa, totally lost year for him. He had a couple of good games, injured himself, his knee, and I don't know whether he just has been injured or just isn't that good or lacks the athleticism to compete in the NBA, but they've gotten nothing out of him. Adrian Payne, despite them having no power forward, still never plays for them. You have to imagine he's not even going to get his fourth-year rookie option picked up. That was a horrible trade, wasn't it, to give up a first-rounder for him?
It was.
Good job by the Hawks recognizing that one was a sunk cost. But
yeah, somehow yeah. they got a first-round pick for Adrian Payne and then gave up a first-round pick for Tim Hardaway Jr. Like, that sequence is amazing.
Andrew Wiggins has probably been a little bit worse defensively and just in terms of playing winning basketball than we thought, but you know, from a scoring standpoint, he's probably about where you would have hoped that he would be at this point. So, you know, I think neither of us had like unbelievably flawed or great logic on this one, but you are going to win it. Now we'll move to the one that I had great logic on. New Orleans, 47.5. They had won 45 the year before. Everyone was talking up Alvin Gentry. The injuries had already started cropping up, and I said, no way, these guys are not going to be healthy enough. That was correct.
I'm going to cry. It was a lost season, and you know, that was too rosy a number. Like, I mean, I just was of the mind of, it's like, oh, if they, you know, if they keep it going, if Davis can stay remotely healthy, and they needed everybody else. I mean, we saw what they ended up starting the season with, which some of those injuries hadn't happened yet, but you know, like that, the flotsam that was on that team at the start of this year that was playing meaningful minutes was kind of awe-inspiring in a weird way.
Yeah, they started Kendrick Perkins and Nate Robinson in the first game. Ish Smith was prominently involved. And then also the guys that they, you know, were just on the team already that they re-signed, Dante Cunningham, Alonzo G, they got really very little out of those guys as well. But, I mean, the defense has been the biggest disappointment. I don't know that I necessarily saw that coming. AD really taking a step back this year, I didn't see that coming either. My thought was, I mean, I said this on the Pelicans preview podcast I did with Mason Ginsburg, that if AD stays healthy, I don't see any way that they could win less than like 41 or 40. And even before he went down, they were well below that pace. I mean, they started 0-11. So, yeah, we thought that Alvin Gentry would be a coaching upgrade. We're not there every day, but there's absolutely zero empirical evidence to indicate that he was a coaching upgrade. Yeah, didn't go too well for these guys.
Yeah. Oklahoma City, 57.5. We both said the under. They're 53 wins right now. I actually think they're going to go under just because they don't have the imperative to squeeze out every last game now.
Yeah, they're pretty much locked into the third seed. They're projected at 57-25, so they would have to go 5-1 to get there. They may kind of rest guys a little bit. They have been playing extremely well lately, though, and I don't think they also were helped by the Spurs resting everybody in that game recently. They're playing Houston today. I don't know how bad their schedule is. I mean, I'm thinking this is a probable win.
Well, I think they might do a tactical nudge loss to the Blazers.
Oh, to make sure they don't have to play them?
Yeah.
Because, let Memphis come down. That's a great point, too. They could do that.
And they also played the Spurs in the game that could, if they beat the Warriors, be the game that gives the Spurs an undefeated home season, which I think they might actually go for.
Okay, yeah, so they play on the road in San Antonio. Yeah, San Antonio, wow, what a ridiculous schedule they have to close the year.
Yeah, they have the hardest remaining schedule in the league in terms of opponent win percentage, I believe.
Now, if you could have told me that Oklahoma City would be this healthy all year, I probably would have gone with the over, actually. I think they've disappointed a little bit. Their point differential has probably been closer to almost 60 win level, but they have been so bad down the end of close games, especially for like that couple month period in like February and March when they're horrible. I mean, I was thinking that maybe Durant would get hurt a little bit or Westbrook would, and they missed a little bit of time. The only one that happened was like a week that Durant missed with his hamstring. Yeah, I guess, is there anything else to say that really deviated from what we expected from this team? I think it's been like pretty darn close, frankly.
Not really. One thing I wanted to mention is that just in a weird scheduling thing that I hadn't noticed until now, they played the Spurs exactly a month apart, March 12th and April 12th, the last game of their season. And it looks like there's a very real chance they only lose one game during that month other than the games to the Spurs. And that's pretty impressive.
If anything, I think that both KD and Russ have outperformed what you reasonably would have expected them to do this year. And it is a little concerning that they are still going to go a little bit under despite that. And they just have not gotten enough from that supporting cast.
Yeah, and when you think about just how they performed against the best of the best, most of those games, it's been, health versus health. And they haven't, they had that amazing loss to the Warriors in Oklahoma City. It's just, it's a little bit concerning to think, like, is their best good enough now? It's close, but I'm not sure it's there.
Now to my probably biggest blunder of the year that you can talk a little crow on. Phoenix, 36.5. I had the over. I didn't feel strongly about it, but I did have it. And you had the under. I believe the term disaster potential was also used for this one. And that potential was...
That was where the term was created. I just had this feeling that the Suns could just fall off a cliff. They fell off a cliff.
Yeah, they were like 12-12 or something through their first 24 games. And then a month later, they were like 12-25. A lot of that too. Bledsoe got hurt. Knight has barely played. He's out again. He's got like a hernia now, and he had a groin strain. Those two could be related. I think his fragility is starting to become a concern. They've gotten nothing from the power forward. Markieff Morris, despite the fact that he had those conflicts with management, he was so bad for them almost over the course of the entire year. Hornacek was fired. I mean, there's just, I don't think, what did you, when you picked the under, like, what did you think they were going to get, like 33 wins or something?
Yeah, I thought there was a possibility they even would maybe get in the 20s, but it would have been if Bledsoe got hurt. But you know what they got from the power forward position? They got the Wizards lottery pick. So you can't knock it too hard. And also, Devin, like, it's weird. Like, they had this kind of disastrous season, but also Devin Booker looked way better than I expected him to. So, like, it was one of those seasons where if you look at it just in isolation, it certainly was depressing and disconcerting and all that. But there are some things in this. I think Alex Len has done better than I expected, especially recently. So that there are reasons to be a little bit more optimistic than you would think when a team underperforms their expectation by 15 wins.
Tyson Chandler also has been horrible. I thought this team could actually be really good on defense, which with Bledsoe, Chandler, PJ Tucker, not bad. Knight is okay. I didn't think it would be so bad for them defensively. Even Markieff, when he's engaged, which he obviously wasn't, can be pretty decent defensively. He's been better since he's moved over to Washington. Chandler has been hurt. He hurt his hamstring early on. I think tried to come back from it too soon. He still even, you know, tweaked his lower back the other day, which is kind of all that lower back hamstring. That's all a chain that's connected. So I think he really has never been right physically all year, which is a surprise given the Suns' usual training staff excellence. Yeah, just everything went wrong for these guys. But I'm actually probably happier for them as a team just because they got Booker, who looks like he might be a better player than anyone they had on the roster at the start of the year.
Yeah, I think they're...
And they'll have another high lottery pick this year. I mean, they might actually be better off long-term as a franchise because of this season right now.
Could be. It could be the reverse of that season like 3 years ago when they, you know, things went better than expected, and so they changed their tact.
Portland, 26.5. Gosh, crazy to think that that was the case. They started off playing pretty well. You and I both had the over, but I mean, I remember saying, you know, 29, 30 wins was more kind of what I thought they would have. They're 41-36 now, on schedule to finish with 44 wins, so they're going to completely blow past that. I think they're going to be the biggest, you know, if they can finish 17.5 wins more than they would have had, I think that would be the biggest overbeater on the board.
Well, no, it's between them and Charlotte. Yeah, those are the two that have the chance at it. Charlotte, I think right now, yeah, Portland is the favorite for it. They, you know, I thought they were going to do this. I felt reasonably comfortable with it. As you said, it wasn't like, oh, they're going to be comfortable with it because they're going to make the playoffs, but they've had an excellent season, and also, again, like the Suns, lots of reasons to be optimistic long-term. CJ McCollum is a serious contender for most improved player. They've got all the contracts they signed in the summer look good, which is nice because most of those guys are signed long-term, and so they still have a crap ton of money to spend this summer.
The biggest difference for them, to me, was I thought they were going to be horrible on defense, and they actually have just been, you know, kind of slightly below average. I think they're like in the low teens defensively. 0.7 net rating on the season. I thought they were going to be pretty darn good on offense, that if everything went right, they could be a top 10 offense. They are currently number 7, a full point ahead of the number 8 Mavericks, point per 100 possession ahead. So that's been pretty impressive for them. And Lillard has been even better than I thought he would be. I mean, he's averaging 25 a game. McCollum has been better. They've gotten a ton out of Al-Farouq Aminu. Plumlee has been great. I mean, Myers Leonard, really the only guy you could look at on this whole team that's disappointed. All the individuals have played better than you would have thought, pretty much on both ends even. So I thought this team would be good. They were score one for the analytics and the translation systems that, even though they had a bunch of guys who hadn't necessarily started before, liked this team. And it turned out to be that way, especially with the way they've started playing. You know, it's funny, I thought they started off around 500, and then I think they were like 17-24 or something like that at one point. I was like, all right, you know, they're regressing to the mean. They'll probably go over, but it looks like they're more on pace to get, you know, low 30s and wins. And then they just absolutely took off in January.
Yeah, it's been a really impressive season for them. And speaking of impressive seasons, the San Antonio Spurs decided this was going to be the year they were going to win. They were actually going to try to win a lot of games. It was set at 58.
Well, they haven't even tried that hard. They just have.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so it was set at 58.5, and they're way past it already. They're at 64 wins. You know, we'll see where they actually end up. But, of course, that's way more than 58 already. So they've just been killing people.
Yeah, just 58 seemed like such a high number, and that was really, I remember saying, I think they're going to be really good, but they're not going to take the regular season that seriously, and that's the only reason I did under. They've even been better than the really good that I thought they'd be, and they've been like all-time great this year. You know, we keep saying that it needs to be said with all the spotlight that's been on Golden State that San Antonio is, you know, probably having a top 10 regular season ever themselves, maybe even top 5 regular season ever. So yeah, that's just pretty simple. There wasn't much to it other than that. I guess the only thing that you could really look at as being a surprise, I guess, number one, that LaMarcus Aldridge has been really good defensively. I never thought he was that bad, but, you know, he's fit right in very seamlessly. And then Manu has been great when he's been able to play. But the biggest thing is just that Kawhi Leonard has been so awesome on offense.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I haven't finished it up yet, but my non-counting MVP ballot's probably going to have him second. And that's remarkable when you consider the margin between not only where he was. Like, I think Kawhi should be considered for most improved player. It's insane.
Yeah, him, Curry, McCollum would be probably the three that come to mind the most for me.
Yeah.
Sacramento started off at 30.5. I think they eventually got bet up to like 35, but we got them early. I'm glad that we did. They have 31 wins, so they've gotten it. It was looking maybe a little dicey, but they've gotten there. They think they've won 4 out of 5 now, and the only one that they have not won is one where like all their guys rested. So yeah, they're projected to finish at 33-49. They might even do better than that. Worse for them in the draft pick sweepstakes. But you know, it's pretty hilarious that the very moment that they were completely out of the playoff race, they started winning again just to screw over their draft pick. That's pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, I thought these guys, everything went wrong for them last year. Cousins missed a ton of time. They still, I think, won 30 last year. I thought that they had improved the bench. In fact, they didn't improve the bench. They've gotten more out of Rondo. Cousins has had a pretty good year. They got more out of maybe like Omri Caspi than you would have thought, but he's been starting a lot of the time. Yeah, I mean, anything else you can kind of think of that we had right or wrong about these guys at the start of the year?
I think their bench depth at the big man spots has done pretty well. Kufos, I think, has had a pretty solid season. He's now, in more recent time, he's played more with Cousins missing time due to suspensions and due to now the fact that he's not playing road games for the rest of the year for whatever reason. And so he's a hometown attraction. And so I think he's done well. Cauley Stein's been all right when he's been on the court. But I think Caspi, you know, really using him in the way that I think hoped George Karl would has been a nice little piece for them.
Yeah, Bellinelli has been terrible. Rondo, I mean, they've actually gotten more out of Rondo than you probably
sure.
thought that they would. Offensively, he's been horrible. Defensively, I mean, that's team's actually been pretty good offensively. They just have not been able to stop anyone at all. If they had a little bit better of an environment, they have guys who have some talent defensively, but you know, both Cousins and Rondo have not been any good on defense this year. I mean, Cousins has been a little better, but yeah, and then Bellinelli has been horrible. A lot of their bench has been horrible. Ben McLemore actually is kind of picking it up a little bit lately. He might be someone to kind of keep an eye on. But
I will note. Yeah, I mean, oh, wait, can I make one note?
Yeah.
It's months away, but I am already excited to see what the negotiations are going to be like for Rondo in the mock off season. It's like that. I feel like that's going to keep us up at night.
Oh, man. I'm really, really, yeah, because there are no point guards on the market this year. Yeah, I guess it all depends, too, on whether the GMs try to actually do the right thing or to, like, channel the GMs of their respective teams. I guess that'll just be up to whoever wants to be GM of the Kings. Are you putting in an early request for that now?
I'm putting in an early request to not be the GM of the Kings. In the mock-off season. If they want to hire me in real life, sure, but they just extended Vlade Divac.
Yeah, but we both felt very strongly about the over. It's going to come in. They have so much talent, it was almost impossible for them to lose. And they were close to 500 at one point, too. They were actually in playoff position, and then things really just imploded from an emotional standpoint for them. Utah, I loved this one. I put $40 on it of my fake money. They are 38-38 right now, projected to finish 42-40. I feel reasonably good about that, especially if when they play San Antonio at home, San Antonio doesn't play their guys. I would feel a little better if Derek Favors were going to come back, but they've played, I thought this was a 45-win team, and they basically played that way except when Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert missed a bunch of time. Maybe that should have been priced in a little bit more, because, I mean, I'm not like ready to crow from the mountaintops here. They're only going to go over like a win or two.
Well, I don't think we expected those guys to miss time at the same time, which is, I think, what really, from what I remember, there was a couple weeks of that, right? Where they both didn't play.
Yeah, there was, I think, and especially Favors missing time. They've not gotten quite as much from Trey Burke as we might have hoped. If they hadn't traded for Shelvin Mack, they might have ended up going under here, frankly.
I think they would have.
And the defense finally has gotten back to the level that it has been. I mean, my thinking was they won 38 last year. They had to deal with Enes Kanter. Their defense was unbelievable as soon as they traded Kanter, and I thought at the very least it would be a top five unit. I didn't expect them to, you know, give up 94 points for 100 possessions, which is like would be like close to best defense of all time level. But I thought they'd be a top five defense, and now finally that they've had all their guys healthy again, they really have kind of defended at that level. So I mean, if the fact that it just goes has been due to health, they had a relatively young roster though, so I felt pretty good about their health, not guys with a ton of injury history. So yeah, it's looks like we're gonna win that one.
Yeah. Do you want to do how we would have apportioned our 100?
Oh, yeah. So what did you do with your 100 bucks?
Okay, so my 100 was $50 on the Charlotte over, which is already gone, $15 on the Kings over, which has already succeeded, $5 on the Houston over, which has failed, and then $30 on the Warriors at 9-2, which is, of course, still up in the air.
Yeah, you'll obviously win it. We should have just not allowed you to do that, but and just made it be all on over-unders. Yeah, basically, if the Warriors win, you're going to win it. If not, I will. I had $40 on Charlotte over. That's happening. $40 Utah over, looking pretty good. $10 Knicks under. desperately holding on for some chance there. And $5 Lakers under, $5 Sacramento over, that's happened. So I've got $50 in the bag and another $40 looking pretty darn likely for me. What is our total tally as far as how we did on the entire league's over-unders?
Oh, I like how you're ending there instead of ending on who would have done better with $100.
Hey, well, not, what do you mean I'm ending? You're the one who actually brought up how we distributed the money.
That's so true.
If you wanted to leave a best impression in people's minds, you should have gone with the one that you're looking better on.
So we each calibrated the likelihood of winning ourselves, but I think I don't think I disputed any of your numbers, really. Is that so? I have 11 that I have counted as like a definite win, either it's already over or it will be. Two that are almost certain, two that are up in the air, two that I have a small chance of winning but will probably lose, and then 13 that I either have or will lose.
Yeah, so I've got 17 in the bag. Our differences were I had Chicago, Milwaukee, Philly, Memphis, and New Orleans unders when you had the over. I had Toronto over, you had Toronto under, and then I had Phoenix over and Minnesota under, and you had the opposite. Although I think if you add up like the difference that we sort of like were on the right or wrong side, that Phoenix under like might actually be pretty close. Oh no, I guess New Orleans and Philly probably get me there. Milwaukee is way under too. The Bulls are, yeah,
hey,
actually
no, you,
most
you,
of my
you,
unders.
You smoked me on that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess everyone that I got right ended up being right in that direction by like 10 wins or so.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that actually worked out pretty well for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got 17 in the bag, three kind of up in the air still. That's Cleveland, Indiana, and Oklahoma City. I had the unders on all of those. And then I have a small chance, very small chance at winning three, and then seven are dead to me. So I could, you know, 19, 20 is probably looking like about where I'm going to end up. And you'll probably be
around 15.
Yeah, you'll be clawing for 500.
Yeah.
But you will, since you apportion your money better, apparently with this Golden State thing.
Well, we'll see if they win the title.
Yeah. All right, what else do we have to talk about? Do we have time for some news here?
I do. Well, I mean, we're going to head to Oracle relatively soon, but
yeah, and then we're going to drive 9 hours up to Oregon, like right after the game too.
Ooh,
we're going to be seeing a lot of Portland. We've got Portland, OKC, and then obviously the Nike Hoop Summit as well. We're going to be there for 3 days and then come back for Spurs and Golden State. But yeah, let's talk about some news. The biggest thing for the playoffs, Blake Griffin says that he still has the tear in his quad. It has now become a pain management issue. And Griffin also alluded to a possible need for surgery after the season. And Griffin also had some troubling comments, basically that, you know, he doesn't want to say it was mismanaged, but he was kind of still working out and it wasn't healing. And, you know, I'm not sure how long he would be out if he had to have this surgery. A quad tendon tear is not an injury that I really recall seeing before in the NBA, but it doesn't sound like this was managed incredibly well. And you have to wonder, I think he's going to play for the first time today. Quad tendon tear, he's had some knee trouble before, and he's having pain in his knee as a result of it. It's hard to imagine, both with him having to reintegrate, get back into shape, and still feeling pain from this injury, that he's going to be the same guy in the playoffs.
Danger, danger, danger. And also, like, I'm not saying it's going to happen, because I still think they're the favorites. But if the Blazers get up onto their line, and, you know, so it's Blazers Clippers in the first round, that is a more contentious series than I think they expected to have in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, especially with Blake trying to work his way back in. And something to remember too is that when guys have been out for a while and then they are coming back for the playoffs, you might remember that maybe they are kind of rushing back and they're not going to be themselves. Damari Carroll falls into this category as well with Toronto. If he plays a couple of games with Toronto beforehand, you shouldn't really, Blake as well, shouldn't really expect that. Alec Burks is another guy, though he's coming back from a bone injury, so that's a little bit less concerning in some ways, a broken fibula. He's supposed to return this week per Tony Jones, but I do think that he can help them a little bit with, you know, he's a better player than Joe Ingles, for example.
Do you want to go with, do you want to go to Pau Gasol next? Where do you want to go?
Yes. You could also just read the next one.
Yeah, I know. So Casey Johnson is saying that Pau Gasol is now not necessarily considered a part of the core. Good. He shouldn't be.
Yeah, and Gar Foreman said that for sure was the case at the trade deadline when they did not move him. They should have traded him. they're going to miss the playoffs anyway with him. He is, if they're not a playoff team, he's probably going to leave anyway. I mean, now whether this not being part of the core is because they're leaking that to Casey because they now think he's going to leave and they're kind of trying to get the fan base prepared for what is such a disaster of losing him, which it isn't, but it probably looks like it does because, you know, Pau Gasol gets a lot of points and rebounds and he's totally overrated.
And you lose him for nothing.
Yeah. Or whether it's just because they realize, hey, you know, we have all these offensive guys, McDermott, Mirotić. Our defense has been terrible. We desperately need a real defensive center, and that's by far their number one need. That and backup point guard are their two big needs this offseason. So, you know, whatever it is, whether it's because he's going to leave of his own volition or because they're not going to try as hard to re-sign him now or not offer him as big of a contract, all that is great news for Bulls fans, frankly.
Yeah. So in concerning news, Sam Dekker is still having back issues and can't practice.
Yeah, and this is, you know, really has gone back to the summer. He had surgery at the beginning of the year. He was supposed to be back in February, was active. I think he played a little bit in the D League too, but the fact that he still is struggling with it is a problem. And, you know, you might wonder, oh, hey, you know, this is kind of boring. Why are we talking about this injury news? Sam Dekker, he's not even in the Rockets rotation. He's not going to play at all in the playoffs. Well, it's just stuff like this. Half the time, but a lot of the time, it ends up being a big deal, right? Like, remember, like, Timofey Mozgov surgery, right? News dump in July, Mozgov having surgery will be back in 6 to 8 weeks. Well, he's been terrible all year this year, and that's probably because he just has never been the same. I mean, he has plenty of incentive to be good. He's a free agent. He hasn't made that much money in his career. If he had played this year the way he played last year, he'd be making $15 million. Now, you know, he's not going to be considered even remotely a starting center option the way he might have. You know, if Cleveland would have been over a barrel, have to pay him this year, now they probably can just let him go and not really worry about it that bad and, you know, pick someone up as good as him for $3 million a year. So it's, you know, these little things, they have consequences in the future. That's why we talk about them, because you have to be aware that once a guy has surgery, until he is back and he looks great, there's always got to be some doubt in your mind. And I think a lot of fans, a lot of GMs, frankly, forget that.
Speaking of free agents that are dealing with injury issues, it sounds like Mike Conley is not going to be reevaluated until the end of the regular season, which raises doubts about whether he will play in their first round series.
Yeah, and he has a strained Achilles tendon, and that's one of those things where that is not a part of the body that heals all that well. And he had a 3 to 4 week timetable. The beginning of the playoffs, I think, would be about 4 weeks from where that was discussed. The fact he's not even going to be reevaluated until then, what wouldn't surprise me, especially with all the other injuries they have, if they get the 7 or 8 seed, maybe even the 6 seed going up against Oklahoma City, but they probably hate them enough and feel like they'd have more of a chance against them. But they get the 7 or 8 seed and they're playing the Spurs and Warriors, I think they probably just don't bother bringing him back. They're not going to win that series. They know they're not going to win that series. Conley's going to be a free agent. For him personally, it would be a really dumb decision probably to play in a series that they have no chance of winning. Maybe they feel like they could beat the Clippers or the Thunder, but if they go up against the Spurs or the Warriors, it's no chance. Even if he plays, why even bother?
And there's so much downside risk for him because he's not going to hurt his stock he's not going to help his stock much by playing well. And if he looks not right, that could potentially negatively affect his value.
Deron Williams has a hernia that he's been playing through for a month. He says it hasn't really been getting better, and that's been a big problem for Dallas because he is one of their few guys who can play, especially because among their guards, he actually has some size. He can hold up okay because they don't have any wings either now with Parsons out for the year, but it's hard to imagine that D-Will is going to get back. Another reason to think maybe that Dallas is going to be the odd team out in the playoffs, despite the fact that they're already kind of behind the eight ball. They actually have a better record right now than Houston does, but Houston has a nice soft finishing kick to their schedule, and I think this is just more bad news for Dallas and hard to imagine them sneaking into the playoffs.
Another guy who could be a free agent this year, he has a player option for next year, and I expect that he will decline his option.
Yeah, for $5 million a year with a weak point guard market, absolutely. Don't need to talk about this too much, but Omri Caspery has a hamstring injury that he hurt pretty badly on Friday. You have to imagine he'll be done for the year. Marco Bellinelli, a foot injury, likely out for the year as well. That's actually given Seth Curry a chance to get some shots. He actually has a player option. He had 17 points in the second quarter last night in Denver. As a shooting guard, he's always going to be terrible defensively, but as a guy who can come in and knock some shots off the bench, he has a player option for $1 million next year, and if he keeps playing well, maybe he will even decline that, especially if he wants to get out of Sacramento. And I guess Oh, yeah, the last thing, Kyrie Irving hurt his ankle against the Cavs on Friday. He is out today against the Hornets. More indication, maybe, that Cleveland will kind of shut guys down a little bit. And that could be important for the teams that they're playing. You mentioned that all the teams they're playing still have something to play for. LeBron will play today against the Hornets. But it looks like the Cavs are going to try and help us win our bet.
And that's something that we pay attention to, and I think it's very good for people. Like, I do it as a part of League Pass Alert and all that just because I like watching all these teams, is that when you play a team can make a really big difference. We talked about it a little bit with the Celtics last year, and sometimes that just happens. You know, you catch a team at the right time, like even what OKC did getting the Spurs without their starters. You know, those are things that happen in April and late March, and some teams will benefit, some teams won't.
This is an argument. Young and Lopez getting shut down is another one. But for these teams, the Spurs, Oklahoma City, Toronto, Cleveland, that's really four teams now that have absolutely nothing to play for right now. And an argument for making the season shorter, not in terms of days, but in number of games. One is that teams won't care as much about resting if there are less games. But number two is, the longer the season is, the more chance that you're going to get enough stratification to where these games at the end of the season aren't going to matter at all. So that is another argument, what's happening with those four teams right now, for why you might want to have less games than you do right now.
And as you know, I'm another voice in that choir for lots of reasons.
All right, that'll do it. What do you got to plug?
So League Pass Alert and Warriors Weekly will both be out in the very near future, and I'm sure we'll be putting out new content related to the Hoop Summit.
Absolutely. We also have to do our awards pod. That'll be coming at some point this week.
Oh, and I should also mention the I've been doing off-season previews for the Sporting News. I will have all 30 teams done by the time the off-season starts, and so you can either go to my author page or you can use my Facebook page and you can go through those. I think the most recent one that came out was about the Grizzlies, talking about the awkwardness in terms of Mike Conley and Memphis moving forward.
Yeah, that'll be a really good one. They have a lot of decisions to make as far as, you know, they're going to keep trying to win right now, or when is the rebuild going to happen, and that kind of stuff. And, you know, Conley, his free agency decision will push them quite a bit in one direction or the other. All right, that'll do it for today. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. You can also follow Danny at DannyLarue. My Facebook page, Nate Duncan NBA. Danny's, as you mentioned, Danny LaRue. Is it Danny LaRue or Danny LaRue NBA?
Danny LaRue NBA. I followed your lead.
And also make sure to patronize our awesome sponsors using that Capspace code. We will talk to you all next time.